Welcome back. This is the Coaches Rising podcast, and delighted to be joined by Lisa Doig today. And we're going to be unpacking the transformational potency of understanding our clients' values. I used to, whenever I heard people talking about values in coaching, I used to kind of feel like, oh, so what? But really inspiring conversation to see how the challenges that our clients come in with reveal the values that are most important, or the values that are at play for them, and how understanding that and working with that actually can unlock the next phase of our client's transformation. Lisa will share with us exactly how she does that. And she'll also talk about seven levels of consciousness and how values apply to each of those levels. It's very revealing. Lisa is the founder of Corporate Evolution, which is a pioneer in integrating values and levels of consciousness in leadership development. She is the creator of Illuminate, Facilitating Deep Transformation, which is a program that's trained more than 250 facilitators worldwide. And she works globally with multinational organizations and top leadership teams. So we're in good hands. So let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Lisa Doig. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. Lisa, good to be with you again. And I'm really excited about our conversation today. So could you say just a little bit before we dive in about your work? I'm really excited to unpack like what you're doing with your clients. But tell the people listening who you are, first of all.
So great to be here, and thanks for inviting me. You could hear from my accent, I'm American. I live in Australia. And I've been in this work for about 25 years. And it started back in when I was about 40. I'm 66 now. And really it started when I was what I'd say is a kind of superwoman. You know, I was brought up to be superwoman, be successful, achieve everything. And I became a workaholic, perfectionist, control freak. And really my whole identity was about being successful. So at 40, I collapsed. And at that point, my husband, Malcolm, was working for an oil company that McKinsey came into. And they brought a guru for personal transformation called Geeta Bellin. I don't know if you've heard of her before. And, you know, they were doing remarkable work. And a lot of people you know, have come out of that training with Geeta. And I came out of a weekend course, and it completely transformed my life. And Geeta looked at me and she said, "You are meant to do this work." And I was a marketing consultant for the oil industry for 20 years. So long story short, I got trained by her and joined McKinsey as an external facilitator for this work of personal transformation. So I was really mostly working there for about 15 years. But there was one thing that I was passionate about, which was values and the seven levels of consciousness. So that's the main part of the work and taking Geeta's work and a lot of the other thought leaders. There was something that spoke so deeply in my body to the power of values. I didn't know at the time why, but I followed that. I became a trainer for Baird Value Center. And I think what it did was it bridged the intellectual, emotional, and spiritual. Because I was very kind of mind structure, how do I get there, you know, show me the steps. And by seeing that seven levels roadmap, it showed me a roadmap. And it spoke so deeply to my own personal experience of why I was kind of repeating the same upsets and never, you know, really transforming them. So long story short, left McKinsey, and the thing I was passionate about was training facilitators in this work, which was both Geeta's work and the values and purpose lens. And now we have Corporate Evolution, and most of what I do now is I train facilitators in this values and purpose methodology, which we call Illuminate. And we have maybe 260 people around the world who are bringing this work, you know, they're accredited in this methodology and are bringing this work to the world.
Thank you. What is it about values and the levels of consciousness for you that are so powerful when it comes to facilitating transformation? Maybe you could also just tell us about what you mean by values and how they connect to the seven levels so we can just get context for it.
Sure. So the reason I was so connected to the seven levels, because it explained my life. It explained why, let's just explain what the model is. So what Richard Baird did was he took Maslow's hierarchy of needs, so physiological safety, survival, love, belonging, self-esteem, and then self-actualization. And he noted that what we value, so values are what we value, right? What we make more important than other things. What we value is connected to whether those needs have been met or unmet. So when you think about, let's say one of my values was achievement. And if you think about the bottom of the iceberg, whatever life experience, you know this, kind of 0 to 7, when we didn't yet have the neocortex to make meaning, whatever life experience of whether I perceived that I was safe, I was loved, or I was good enough, you know, all we can do in that early age with the emotional brain is see it as pain or pleasure. And so I move towards it if it's pleasure, I move away from it if it's pain. And so whatever life experience I had forms my belief. So with achievement was, you know, I have to overachieve to belong. And so you can see how the life story forms a belief and we form a value around it. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
So my biggest story is that being the youngest of four girls, that by the time I was born, I felt completely forgotten about. And, you know, I remember this one time we're going out for dinner and I see my parents at the top of the driveway, my three sisters, my parents are arguing, my sisters are unto themselves, and they got in the car and drove away. Like they forgot about me. So one of my core beliefs is there's no one there for me. My value is independence. So that's how values get formed. And most of us are unconscious. So the belief is, no one there for me has actually been an accelerator in my life, right? Because that's why I'm independent, traveled countries, you know, built offices, built companies, lots of benefits. So we don't make that belief all wrong. But what I was unconscious of was team player, nope. Feedback, nope. Do I listen to people? Nope. You know, unless I really, truly respect them. So I was completely unconscious of that belief is still present in my life. So if you unpack the iceberg and I see that belief, there's no one there for me, I kept recreating the same upset throughout my life. And in fact, I'll leave them before they leave me. And so that's why the values encapsulate what's really important to you. And one of the things, we studied with John DeMartini, and one of the things he said was, whatever you call out as your top one or two values is where your biggest perceived missingness is. Where you believe that you're not whole, right? So like when I had achievement, it was so important to me because I didn't feel good enough. The top value for me now, I'd be interested in your top value. My top value now is just being presence. And even that has a perceived unmet need. I'm striving for it. But even, I've been doing this for 25 years, I can see, I perceive I'm not source. I perceive I'm not presence. So therefore, I value it. But in that, the reason I love the values is by noticing that that's my number one value and I perceive the missingness, now I know my next transformation to move through that illusion.
So couple of questions come up. This is really powerful, what you're sharing. It's beautiful, I think. One is, this points to, I think, what I hear on this podcast, which is instead of striving to attain a particular value, the self-improvement paradigm, it actually sounds like it's a turn back towards the pain inside of us, this mistaken belief that I am not already that thing. So it's a kind of via negativa experience, like metabolizing that belief rather than I need to perfect and develop myself to that next stage.
Yeah, it's loving that belief. It's noticing it and allowing it space, allowing it space to feel it and to say, well, how has that actually served me? Right? It's got you here. You're successful. Think about at work, at home, and with self, how has that belief served you? How has it not served you? And if the not serving you, when we bring it to our awareness, is big enough, then it's almost like the ego is willing to shift it. Because I actually ask to the ego, do you want to shift this?
So I want to go into that. We'll kind of bring in the seven levels in a moment when we feel it's the right time. But just to stay with what you've just shared here, Could you share, you said like, oh, you know, this belief around, this value around being presence. I can't remember exactly how you articulated it, but, and it reveals to me my next area of development. And, you know, what you're saying also is that our top values are, you know, and I imagine our challenge, reveal our challenges around that value and can be a doorway in to the development. Yes. So how do you actually start to work, you know, when you say it's my next area of development, how do you work with that?
So I have a practice. I was reflecting on this about, you know, this type of work that I've helped to create, it's really for a kind of structured, disciplined people, you know, and most of my clients are, you know, like this. So we ask ourselves on a scale of 0 to 10, how much am I living presence in my life, at work, at home, and with myself? 10 out of 10. Maybe I give myself a 7, and then I say, what would be different if I were 10? If I were 10, I would have space, I would feel expansive, I would be on the balcony of my triggers, I would see life unfolding, right? And then the question is, what's the belief that keeps me at a 7 and not a 10? And then I get my belief. I'm worried about what my husband will think. I'm worried about this. And then, you know, so then what we're listening for is what's the old story and the old belief. And that's what we do the transformation on.
Right. So how would you, I mean, I'm just going to keep following this. Like, how would you do that? You've surfaced that belief. And then, you know, maybe the client, maybe is even by talking about it, is starting to feel how it lives inside their,
yes,
you know, their body and their shape. How do you work that?
So we start with what are the top 2 or 3 values? Because there's an intermingling between values. Typically, if you look at your top 1, 2, 3, they're often the same value in different words. You know, integrity, fairness, honesty, achievement, success, balance. So it's really interesting, first of all, just to sense into this person and what's their kind of life theme or what's their personality, you know, when we talk about the 5 personality traits. Having done this for 25 years, it is there, you know, you can really group the different personality types, almost like, you know, the scarf model. It's almost like those same beliefs. So when you look at the top 3 values and you ask those questions, you usually get a core belief, like I'm not good enough, I'm not loved, I'm not safe, whatever it might be. So we just pause there. So that's just awareness. Then I get on the balcony and I ask the question to your heart, what would you love to create in your life? So that's the heart connecting with who you really are. And what's the belief in the way? So both of their current challenge, and I love that question of what you'd love, because that's their deepest knowing or their deepest yearning. And then you could say, so what's the sense into what's the core belief? And they feel it in the body, like you said. All the questions are not in the head. We keep saying, because if I see them go like this, you know, they're in their head. So connect back with your heart. Feel it in your body. You could also connect that with the chakras, just in terms of where it is in the body. And then often I do the Byron Katie question. If you put that belief aside, you know, first of all, is it 100% true? I'm not good enough. No. Where do you feel in the body, in my stomach, third chakra? If I put that belief aside, who would you be? And you ask it of the heart, and the true self voices or an image comes. You know, one of the questions you had for me is, what is one of the most powerful movements as a coach? It's this. And you might have to ask it two or three times because the head and the ego want to interfere. But if you can say it from your heart and your, you know, as a coach, we have to hold the person in their highest potential, that they will connect with their knowing. If you put that belief aside, who would you be? And you get words and images that are from another world. They're not rational words. Light, glowing, expansiveness, love. I mean, so we're up this. So we say, that's your authentic self. That's your true self. You know, do you feel constricted or expansive? Expansive. And I often ask the question, so how is that upset, that challenge? How is that a setup, you know, the upset setup, or what's the biggest, what's your knowing of what's calling you now? And then what value is calling you to be lived more fully or courageously? Because once we've shifted from the belief, who would you be? What value is calling you now? That's the next evolution. That's usually the next level of consciousness. And then what's going to happen? They're going to have upsets with that value. And they go through the whole process again. So for example, I was working with a lady. She's been in a coaching circle. And she was pretty stuck for 2 or 3 months. We're going through the same process. And she had the same upset and the same stuckness. And like nothing was going to budge, right? And sometimes it takes, you know, several sessions to connect with your heart. And so we went through the same process, put the belief aside, who would you be? And, oh, the space and the knowingness that came. And I said, what value is now calling you? She said, surrender. And it was like, it just came out, surrender. And what's your knowing within surrender? What's the I am? I am, I usually say whatever the value is, what's the knowing or belief that sits within it? I am dot, dot, dot. Let the person fill it in from their heart. And then we say, what's a prototype? I like, you know, it's up there. So it's like, let's ground it into a prototype. Because I do think just having awareness is not enough. Just light bulbs is not enough. You have to walk through the fear, right? You have to walk through the illusion. So she said, she called me a few weeks later. She goes, you're not going to believe this. She said, I've been living surrender. She said, my entire, everything's changing. She said, I feel light, I feel love, I feel like this whole issue is not even an issue. So I love that. That's the work.
What I'm hearing, and I'm curious what you say about this, is in a sense like there's a mistaken identification with a certain belief, which then, you know, that's projected onto the world. This is the way the world is. Mm-hmm. And then through the values exploration, you're able to reveal that belief. And yes. Then there's a dropping. And so there's awareness of that. And then there's a shift beyond it, a dropping into this, yes, into the heart, into a,
yes,
true self. And then there's a kind of knowing of who one is from that place. And
yes.
You know, I see this move in various ways in many different paradigms where, yeah, it's a shift from, it's a disidentification from a contraction into, yes, a identification with a wider sense of self. So, you know, yes, like I am this, I am surrender, you know. It's, yes, not like you, yes, need to disidentify from surrender. It's now, no, you're going to, yes, be surrender. Do you, is, yes, that, does that ring, yeah, true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the I am is really the ultimate connection with that embodied knowing, because that's a bodily knowing. There's one piece I would say, surfacing the belief, and then there's the transformational questions. There is a piece there about loving your belief.
I'm glad you, because I wanted to bring that up. I think that's essential. Yeah. You're not just trying to get away from something.
No, it's, yeah, like, oh, here's what we're not doing is we're taking a belief and we're exchanging it with a more empowered belief. I do feel we're going deeper than that. So there is this transition. It's almost like being on the balcony of your belief. how has it served you? You know, it's and you have to hold that so that they could feel it. They're like, yeah, you know, when people go, oh, yeah, I know. They're not feeling it, right? So what are all the ways? And can you feel that in your body? Because don't make it all wrong. It's really gotten you here. And then what's the ways that it's now not serving you? And I, again, work home self. It's usually the self that's the biggest pain point, right? Because I'm not living my potential. Because I'm not well, because my children will carry on the pattern, right? So but you're really holding them, right? You're holding them in this kind of crucible of one of the things DeMartini says is there's an equal number of drawbacks and benefits to every life experience. And when you acknowledge and see both sides, then the belief collapses.
The say belief more about of the that. Life.
So one of the things DeMartini holds, do you know John DeMartini? Have you?
I mean, only through work? Your referencing of him when we met. So
okay,
I don't
so
know
he's,
his work. No.
Yeah, so his work is the breakthrough experience. And he talks, I mean, he talks about how every life experience has an equal number of drawbacks and benefits. And what happens is we only see one side of the coin and we make it wrong. And then it gets, you know, it stays in our nervous system. And so I'll give you my example. So my belief was my mother pushed me my whole life to be successful. And at 40, I was really angry. And I remember this coach, Barbara Wilby in Sydney, and she was doing all the Woodside stuff at McKinsey. And she said, so what are all the drawbacks of having a mother who pushed you your whole life? And I was like, you know, I knew all those really easily. They came really easily to me. And then she said, so every life experience has an equal number of drawbacks and benefits. Let's turn the coin. What's the benefits of having a mother who pushed you your whole life? So there aren't any. I seriously could not think of one. That's how stuck I was in that belief. And she said, well, can you just, you know, just one small thing. And I said, okay, well, I guess I, you know, moved from Chicago to London. I opened these offices. Yeah, I traveled the world. Yeah, and then I, you know, successful businesses. Then went to, and oh, yeah, and then I got in this work, and now I'm in transformation. I had a breakdown, which actually led to me coming into this work, and now I'm transforming lives. And there's an equal number. So I do have a deeper coaching process where you will be amazed that if there's 50, there'll be 50 on the other side. And so we read back all those benefits, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. And of course, the emotional, spiritual are the most important. You know, of course, I would not be doing this in my life had my mother not pushed me. So we read back all the benefits and say, as a result of this life experience where your mother pushed you your whole life, who have you become? And this is another one of these powerful questions. It just comes. It comes from the knowing. It comes from the soul of what your soul contract has been, what you're here for. It is the most amazing process. He has one that has like 16 columns. I've just taken it down to two. And that's the deeper, that's what we're holding for every coachee. I will never, you know, there's no life experience that doesn't have perfection to it. And we as a, like we can't hold consciousness as a coach if we don't believe that. If we still feel victim of any part of our life, we can't hold consciousness for our coachees.
Well, how come? Say more about that.
Because I've got a charge with, because, well, you could get them to kind of level four consciousness, which is all about growth and evolution and being on the balcony of your life. But if you want to move to the higher levels of consciousness, which is, you know, seeing the perfection of life and that you are life, you are source consciousness, if at the higher levels of consciousness, there is nothing wrong. There's only perfection.
Yeah. So we're going to go to that in a moment, but with the Demartini, it's like, it sounds like there's something that gets released as you see that there are an equal number.
It's a collapse. Exactly. It's a collapse. So think about anytime we're holding a belief, it's energy, right? A thought is energy. And all energy has a positive charge and a negative charge. A waveform. All thought is a waveform. It has a positive and a negative. You can't not have both. So what we do with our beliefs is we hold the negative. So we're not seeing the wholeness of every life experience. We're only seeing the drawback. And so by evening out, and normally, you know, as we get older, we start seeing these things. But you can actually, in every moment, this is the Demartini work, every moment has the wave. And if you have a big charge, it's really wrong. I mean, he does a lot with rape and incest, and I mean, it's amazing the work he does. That the bigger the wave, of course, the bigger emotional charge. So if I'm still victim, the drawbacks are going to be very big, right? And it has the opposite. It's all dual. It's collapsing duality is what his work is.
Yeah, I can feel it. You know, I see that in my own life where there's like a heat or a charge around a particular belief I have about myself or the world. And then at some point, you know, I see the bigger picture and that, you know, that thing that I've been judging as wrong is just, it's part of the sacredness of life. And actually it did bring benefits and so then it's like the heat, I can feel what you're saying, like the heat just dies out of that issue, you know, it's like,
When you see the perfection, it's just an event.
Right.
Without any,
I want to pivot back later to talk about metabolization of this topic of metabolization of, you know, beliefs and stuff. But we've teed up like the levels of consciousness a few times. So I think it's good to just bring it in here and, maybe you could just kind of name what they are for you and how it connects to values.
Okay. So let me explain this, the seven levels of consciousness, which is from Richard Barrett. And as I said, our values are based on our beliefs and whether we feel they've been met or not met. Okay. So the level one of consciousness is essentially around survival. So I might have values, you know, the belief is, do I have a right to exist? And you think about the first chakra, it's the same thing, right? The root chakra. The need is to survive. And so therefore, my values could be about money, it could be about control, it could be about health, like your health, but at a survival level. Not wellness, which would be level six, okay? But my worry is there's not enough and I might not exist. So that's level one. The positive side of that is I'm grounded and I look after my finances. You know, I have to pay school bills, right? So there's a positive side and there's a shadow side. The shadow is that I might not survive. So I have to control, like COVID. I mean, honestly, I went to the shops to buy toilet paper. I went right back, to level one, right? Because things happen in life. Look at the war at the moment, you know, that a lot of the world's going back to level one consciousness, okay? If I get that need met, then a human being wants to grow and evolve to the next level. And this is also like age, 0 to 7, 7, 14. So the second level of consciousness develops typically, you know, teenager years when I want to belong and I want to be liked. And so the need at level two is to be loved or to belong. The positive side of it, I have relationships and I want to connect. The shadow side is if I'm fearful that I'm not loved or I had a life experience where I didn't think I was loved, then I might be scared of conflict. I might be scared if I say this, somebody's going to leave me. Alternatively, my favorite one is that happened for me in the teenage years. So what I did was I left. I would, for fear of not belonging, I would leave so that I didn't have to deal with that. So that's kind of 7 to 14. The next level of consciousness is a human being wants to be recognized. They want to prove themselves. So the third one is around performance or achievement. And the types of values at level 3 would be success, achievement, recognition. And when you think about it, it's kind of 21 in your 20s and early 30s. The healthy side of it is you want to prove yourself, you get some skill, right? But the shadow side is if my whole identity is about being recognized or if I didn't feel good enough, my father never told me I was good enough, whatever the story is, then the potentially limiting values like workaholic could happen, control can happen, perfectionist, you know, all these ones. The first time I saw this list and the shadow ones are in red, I was like, why are those in red? Because I thought that's who I was supposed to be, you know? I didn't know they were shadows. So, those are all socialized mind, right? They're all reactive tendencies, both positive and shadow side. Level 4 comes at a time in our life when you say, you know, what got me here won't get me there, right? It doesn't necessarily happen. It's usually the wake-up call. Divorce, health, some big upset. I told you my story where I collapsed because that level 3 was an overdrive. And so level 4 is the essence of it is growth, and it's moving out of fear. It's becoming aware that my fear was driving me. So level 4 is really that bold step about courage. And you could kind of hear how the values change. You know, it's courage, it's learning, it's growth. I mean, most of the people in this field, right, who do what we do, have had some type of wake-up call to want to do this work. So level 4 is a time you go back and you look at your life story and the patterns and the beliefs, and you take accountability for it. So levels 1 to 3, you can still be in victim. You're blaming, you're feeling separate. And level 4 to 7 is kind of the soul journey. So the level 4 is a wake-up call. Level 5 is about being your authentic self, right? And as coaches, this is mostly what we do for people. And this is about, do I live my core values all the time? And if you're not living them all the time, there's some belief that's in level 1, 2, and 3, not to make it wrong, but there's still some perception of why I can't be my authentic self. So that's what level 5 is also, I start stepping into purpose. Who am I? Why am I here? You know, 1, 2, 3, 4 is more like the internal validation. I need you to tell me I'm okay, right? So 4 is the self-authoring. It's the external, getting your validation from inside. So 4, 5, and I do feel like there's this big shift from level 5 to level 6. The 6 is really the seeing the perfection of every upset in your life. You're more in tune with your soul purpose and starting to see all the synchronicities, and the frequency really shifts. You know, when you think about when we all met each other in Spain, that was people living their soul purpose, right? And so level 6 is collaboration. It's a higher level 2, but we're able to let go of our fears and we're in abundance to truly collaborate and co-create. That's probably the most important word. True co-creation is level 6 is the emergence of the field, right? You're listening and sensing to the field of what wants to emerge. And the I am at level 6 is I am love, right? At level 2, it's I am loved. level six is the realization that I am love. And level seven is unity consciousness. We are all one. And the interesting, when you're, you know, when you get to the level seven, we all have moments of it. I don't want to think like, oh, that's Gandhi. It's only Gandhi who could be that, right? We all have moments of seeing a sunset. And before our mind goes, oh my God, this beautiful sunset, your body is in awe, right? That's that moment, that glimpse of level seven. So the shadow of seven is one, right? You know, a lot of spiritual gurus who have no money. Six is two, five is three. So, and I see it as a spectrum, Joel, not a, it is a hierarchy in terms of consciousness, but it's a spectrum that seven isn't better than one, right? It's just the center of gravity. And what happens is we have some upset in our life, which brings us back to the earlier levels because there's a belief that wants to be transformed. So we don't make one, two, three bad. One, two, three is a space of transformation.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up. You know, we've had conversations quite some on this podcast about levels of consciousness and some of the pitfalls potentially of, you know, particularly in like Anglo-American kind of culture where those stages were born from, you know, particular industrial models of, yes. You know, what it means to be human and, you know, the pitfall of like, it's like, I want, you know, higher is better basically. And then we can kind of assess people as being lower. And, you know, so like I've been sat with this sense of like, you mentioned Spain when we were on Patrick Connor's retreat together. And, you know, I've noticed that, so that, you know, you could say that in a sense, like that retreat was a modulator of experience. It's like Patrick holds a powerful field. Yes. And, you know, it's very difficult to, it's kind of, although it's a field which within which one can be all that one is, that's also beautiful to actually name here. But it's, you know, it's also a field in which it's very easy to feel one's sense of unity and light, you know, as one, as the core of one's being. So, you know, I've noticed this in other places and I look at my own life. You know, I can see that part of me that wants the survival instinct that kicks in and wants to prepare. So it's kind of rich and nuanced and we're nuanced and like we're very much based in our identity arises in relationship to the context we find ourselves in. So I'm just kind of naming a few kind of and so anyway, let me pause there because I want to name some more as well, but I don't know if anything comes up there.
So what I'd say is a few things. You know, one of the groups we work with here are Aboriginal elders. We actually do a Aboriginal Leadership Institute here in Perth, which has been formed by some elders. And I trained one of the ladies in the seven levels, and she couldn't really, she didn't really resonate with it. So I said, do it your way. You know what she did? She started with level seven. She said, this is who we are. She said, we are the land. We are unity. We are the animals. And so she teaches the seven levels from seven to one.
See, I like that. That's beautiful. Yeah.
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 And when we're coaching, you know, our clients, it's like an onion, you know, at the core of the onion is level seven. That's who we are as source consciousness. And the layers come on the outside, which is just our, you know, the ego illusion to fall away. And that's our life journey. But what we hold as coaches is that our client is level seven. That's the holding energy for the whole coaching.
I love that. That's very powerful. What, I mean, maybe the answer is very simple to this, but how do you do that? You just do.
Well, honestly, you know, I've been doing this 25 years. And when I first started, my wake up call just got me to level four. you know, just in terms of personal growth and courage and moving out of fear. So it's been, you know, Joel, it's been my journey for 20 years, and every upset has shifted my consciousness. And like what I would say is the Illuminate facilitator accreditation we do, it is designed to take people from 1 to 3 to 4, maybe to 5, where they could stand in their life purpose and see every upset in their life has been purposeful for them to be in the purpose that they're in. Like there's nothing that has been wrong. Everything, like you could see the red thread in every single person's life. And then they're free. They're absolutely free to be in their greatness. So I was gonna, I'm writing a book, and one of my first versions was my personal story of how I've moved from 4 to 5 to 6, and now I'm kind of 6 to 7. But it's because I live the work. And I deeply, deeply believe in this as truth. Yeah.
Do you think that the intensity of life can actually create a shift from, you know, like 1 to 6 or to 7? So I asked that because a friend of mine once said, like, the world wars were the most powerful soul-making times in our history, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. like, if I hear this story with like a school teacher who wasn't Jewish going into the gas chambers with the children to comfort them as, you know, mm-hmm. as that that's just an extraordinary act of service, you know, of sacrifice. And I wonder, because it can feel kind of like a bit bleak if we think, well, everyone's contracting to 1 because of the intensity of life. So my sense is, and I've seen this amongst my friends, that people, and I feel this in my own life, it's like my, let me say this, if I'm honest, like I can feel the part of me that wants to kind of hunker down and survive, you know, and I don't want to make that part of me wrong, but I can also feel this call into service, you know, to
yes.
being a contribution. Like,
yes.
like, I mean, God, if like it really is going to get very difficult, I want to, you know, I want to be on my deathbed looking back and feeling like I was a contribution. So,
yeah. Well, it's a choice of where you choose to spend your energy, you know. So the first step is just to become aware that that's not me, and I have these patterns and I have these beliefs, but that's not who I am. So, you know, a lot of coaching is just awareness. So you're aware, and then we're always a choice of noticing I'm in this, you know, fear-based paradigm. Just noticing it and choosing. See, this is another thing about values. You can always go back. What are my top two values? What's my purpose? What's my top two values? Because I go off on tangents, and I have this discipline. I have this little book, which is my values journal, which is my purpose and my top values. And every week I go back to it, and I see the perfection of my upset to my values teaching me this right now. So one is choice. Noticing and being a choice, and investing your time in feeling your purpose. I mean, I remember when we were at the retreat, I saw your potential. So I was like, I don't know if you felt this, but I saw what you're going to do with Coaches Rising, and I saw it more than you saw it at that moment, you know? So it's choosing to spend your time in, the aspiration of who you want to be, because it's always evolving, and who you want to be, of course, you're going to get the next upset, and then you transform that, a new value emerges, And I've just been in awe of watching my values evolve. And now they're pretty much all around being and presence. Although I did have a new one last week around courageous conversations. See, that's back to level two, right? The upsets of my life, I'm not speaking my truth fully. So I'm like, okay, back to that life pattern. And, but my self-work is speaking, expressing my truth from source as opposed to from ego. So now I've set myself in the next week to have these courageous conversations. And I had one yesterday and it was really good. I'm walking through my fear.
I want to ask you about this process, but just the reflection is, you know, what I noticed for me is I used to, when I came across these kind of stages of consciousness and, you know, even the idea of enlightenment, Ken Wilber often kind of placed like non-dual awakening at the top of his stages.
Yeah.
You know, I really wanted to, it's just like, of course, I wanted to be there, you know?
I want that.
The older I get, the less I care about things like that. In fact, I feel now it's like I'm coming out of a kind of indoctrination is a bit of a, it's not indoctrination, but it's like the parts of me that felt like it needed to have that in order to be okay.
Exactly.
And the parts of me that took on spirituality as a bypass, you know, as a way to escape suffering and tension and the real well-being that's come from a descent, you know, and an actual embracing of things which I'd kind of judged before due to, you know, maybe spiritual beliefs I took on, like, you know, impeccability, integrity, like performance even, you know. Yeah. So I'm now finding like real love in craft, you know, things that I like before I'd kind of written off as like, well, you know, I just want to end up in some kind of like completely liberated being state where I don't care about anything. Yeah. And so,
yeah, that's a striving. That's a striving. And it's actually loving the journey, like whatever you're in right now, to experience it fully in the whole body. And, you know, asking your inner self, like listening to your inner wisdom. What is this about? What's the message for me? What's the deeper truth? At least what I've learned with this values work, is it's opened my channel within me to hear the messages. So, that's what I'd say.
Tell me more about that, because I know that's something we've talked about quite a bit. So, you know, the importance of inner wisdom and how you connect to it. What is that for you?
Well, I think everyone has different senses, right? Like visual, hearing. My thing is I go out for a walk and I just get downloads. I need space. And so for me, it's I just hear messages. And, you know, I used to think it was my self-talk. And then I went to a body worker. I'm laying on her, you know, table. And she'd find where the block is. And she'd go into the block. And I'd have a voice come through me. I thought it was my self-talk. And she said the same thing that I was thinking. So it was my inner wisdom that was speaking. And she said the same thing, because she's psychic or whatever it is. And I thought, oh, that's my wisdom. That's not my self-talk. So that actually gave me confidence. And especially when I'm facilitating, is to trust it. So trusting the voice that's within you, because... like one part is just knowing the old pattern, and go, oh, here I am, rinse and repeat again. Yep. And, well, you know, I'm passionate about values, is when I come back to what I'm surfacing as my top three values, that's the part of me that wants to evolve and grow. And then I'm listening for the wisdom that's within it. And at the end of the day, you can't live on a cloud, so you have to walk through the fear. Right? We know a lot of people who go to every spiritual retreat, but you have to come back to reality and have that conversation. And but I'm just finding that these synchronicities and the unfoldment, it's because you got to do the work. Everyone's got their pattern, and it's just not making it wrong and saying, this is connected to my soul purpose. You know, what I've come here for, this is the duality, right? So does that make any sense to you?
It does, yeah. I mean, it kind of comes, it brings me back to what you said before about you have a value kind of a journal, and I'm wondering how you would invite people listening now to kind of, this is what came up for me. It was like I heard Joe Hudson talking about decision making and how we can clarify what principles are really alive for us right now, which I think is the same thing. It points, not the same thing exactly, but it points to like what are the deeper principles and values behind what's important to us, which then can inform what we choose to do. And when you talked about courageous conversations, it's like, you know, there's just moments in life where you feel like, this has just become, this has come alive for me right now.
Yes.
So I'm wondering how you would invite people to kind of start to relate to values, you know, if they were journaling or just, you know, relating to it.
Yes. So something super simple, I think, is first noticing what is challenging you in your day-to-day life, right? So you're just noticing discomfort, you're noticing, you're ruminating about the same thing, but you're just noticing that there is an upset. And a really easy way is noticing if you're blaming someone or feeling a victim or feeling there's something wrong with a situation. So, okay, you know you're in an upset. So one is notice the biggest challenge in your life, okay? Number two, what are the top two or three values that are important to you right now? Okay, not the same list you had for 20 years ago, but right now what's important to you? And secretly we know why it's important to you, right? Is because there's a perceived unmet need or missingness that the value is trying to wake you up, okay? So what are your top two or three values? How much are you living that value? 0 to 10, right? What's the belief of why you're not living it fully? Boom, there's your belief, okay? Notice your beliefs, two or three values. It's usually the Maslow core beliefs. I'm not safe, I'm not loved, I'm not good enough, or variations of those. Can you connect those beliefs to your challenge? Okay, you immediately have a light bulb. That's your work. That's the transformation work. So what most people do is they make the challenge wrong, but we're kind of going, no, the challenge is your wake up. The challenge is consciousness waking you up. It's like the next growth. And then, you know, the transformation is loads of people have modalities like Byron Katie and, you know, we have the values. Everyone has different modalities, but the key is the heart knows who you are. You know, what's the gift in this for me? Put the belief aside, who would I be? Who do I want to be? Any of these transformational questions, you know, how is this part of my purpose? Why have I created this? All these type of questions, your heart knows, and that's the light bulb. So that's you know, to see everything in life is in service of you. You know, I think it was Eckhart Tolle who says, life will give you, life will give you whatever experience is most beneficial for the evolution of your consciousness. Life will give you whatever experience is most beneficial for the evolution. That's really what our work is. Being on the balcony and seeing that everything is serving us.
And that kind of brings me back to a point I wanted to come back to, which is that kind of piece of loving the beliefs or feeling the, you know, feeling the emotional valence of that belief. And, you know, I know you've got your own method and you've talked about these different practitioners you've worked with, you know, Byron Katie and DeMartini, and I know you've Gita Belin and, you know, Shai Tubali's expansion method. What, from all of that, I wonder, and you've probably spoken into this somewhat, but I want to kind of see if we can expand it a little bit more. What is the essence of opening, you're releasing that belief, you know, or metabolization?
Yes. Well, this was a really big light bulb for me a few months ago. Because, as you know, I took this Shai's course on chakra healing, trauma and healing. And I really see the chakras mirroring the values, right? Because the life development stages of chakras, of course, those values become important at every chakra level. And he said every chakra has three levels. And I realize values have the same. The outer layer is where our day-to-day triggers are, right? So let's say the value of achievement for me is my, you know, I'm getting triggered. I have to, you know, overwork. I have to be perfect. That is a pattern. And so the outer layer is our day-to-day triggers. The middle layer is where our trauma is held. So that belief, I have to overachieve to be loved, that's held in my 0 to 7 years, right? That is held in my mother pushing me in my story. And so therefore we have to do that deeper work, whether it's trauma healing or expansion method or the DeMartini, that's the deeper work to see the perfection and the gift so that the belief and the stuckness in the nervous system transmutes to light. I mean, you know this, right? It's whatever process where that belief that we have held is wrong, when we realize that we've become who we are because of that, that it was almost a soul contract to experience that, that when that transmutes, then we get to the core of the value or the chakra, which is love or source or essence. So every value is teaching us love. Every upset setup is an experience of love. And then I had this light bulb that we can actually consciously track our values to go through that, the upset setup. And I realized every upset in our life is teaching us love. It's like love. Think about the seven levels. As we move, we're learning love, 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 love. Ultimately, level seven, you know, as we move through this, the real, that is who, that's the, there is only love. And this is my life journey to realize that. I'm not saying everybody should realize that. It's kind of like, wow, you know, there's only fear and love.
That's beautiful. I just wanted to let that breathe a little bit. Yeah, yeah. That's been my experience, that it's interesting to hear you talk about this, you know, the outer, middle, and inner. Because it does speak really beautifully, doesn't it, to that same process of like that the outer world is a reflection of, you know, it's an invitation into the, you know, the patterning, the contraction.
Yes.
And
if we'll just recreate it.
Yeah. But it's like that patterning, that contraction, if we're trying to get rid of it, it only grips on more. So it's actually like the healing comes from the light, from, you know,
yes,
IFS, it comes from self energy,
yes,
you know, and then that, you know, brings, yes, a kind of loving presence to this trauma that, yes, it never had. And then it unwinds into love, you know, as Patrick, yes, says, it's like, in fact, I'm not going to be able to quote him now, but it's something like, you know, the darkness is contracted light, basically.
That's it.
You know.
Yeah, and the greater the darkness, the greater the light.
So.
And do you remember? Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful. So, and I think that kind of maybe opens up just to move into, like, you know, one of the things I often say to our community is, like, I feel coaches can play an important role in our times. And, you know, I've been sat with also inquiring into, like, where are we actually making a difference in the world, you know, as opposed to having, you know, a dream or espousing to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think, so I'm more humble than I used to be, but at the same time, I really do believe in the more people we have, not to save the world, but to support others to be able to meet themselves in relationship to the intensity of life right now seems more important than ever, because, like, the triggers are really loud. I think that's the gift of our times, you know, that I've been thinking about this is, like, yeah, it's really devastatingly difficult for a lot of people, and I'm very privileged. So I'm careful saying this. That I, you know, it's easy for maybe me to say it's a gift, but for me it has been, in that I've had to look at where, you know, where am I being really caught in reactivity and judgment and fear, and to love those parts of me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I'm losing my question a little bit, which is, I think, what do you think is the call for coaches right now, and the challenge that the field of coaching needs?
I feel there's, you know, when you think about seven levels, there's coaching way of being at each level. And I feel the most important thing is for coaches to live transformation in their own life. And when they do, and they shift their consciousness, they're able to be of greater service to their clients. So I really think the work is self. And if you're truly at level seven consciousness, where you are me and I am you, every client that I'm attracting is me. So therefore, that's a message for me to do that work. I mean, I really do believe everyone who I come in contact with is a reflection of me. And so that's my work. And when I do that, I hold a much bigger space, an authentic, non-judgmental. It's not, I remember my early days of coaching, I was like, if I didn't leave that coaching thinking I had really, you know, transform them. Such level three consciousness, right? That's my message, is the more you do the work on yourself and you see the perfection of every moment, you hold a bigger field for your clients, and your frequency is shifting the planet.
Beautiful. Yeah. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want to name before we start to bring our conversation to a close?
No. The only other thing that was one of your questions was, I do sense this possibility for us all to hold this field together. Mm. And again, maybe it's because I am letting go. Like, I do notice in the last few years, it's like, let go, let go, let go of all the, you know, it's mine, it's my stuff, you can't have it. You know, it's like, I'm just letting go. And what that does is it opens up deeper connections, you know, with Amy and with Bob and with you. And I have this feeling that holding this wider field together has the ability to shift more and in resonance. I don't really know the answer. I just have this feeling and sense. Mm.
It does speak to me that on one level, if we're all making our way as, you know, practitioners, right, and we've got our businesses, and there's something beautiful about that, but we're all siloed and separate.
Yes.
Yeah. And if the field in general is able to collaborate in a way that amplifies what we can give, then that seems to be a beautiful thing. And, you know, I find the kind of current paradigm that's dominant, you know, capitalist paradigm, is kind of like, can feel dense and trying to escape that kind of siloed feeling sometimes. I do resonate with what you're saying.
Yeah. And I feel with what you're doing at Coaches Rising and the summits, you are doing that.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
Hey, Lisa, thank you so much for sharing yourself so generously. And it's been a real delight to get to know you, I must say that. And you really embody generosity for me, like the conversations we've had and your holding of space has been really rich for me. Where can we find out more about your work as well?
Well, you can find it on our website, which is www.corpevolution.com. And yeah, everything's there. People can contact me directly on LinkedIn. And I love the conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches, because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.